Good morning, everyone. If everyone would take their seats, I think we're just about ready to start. And this morning, great to see so many people here today. Really good roll-up. We should get some good singing happening shortly. The singing from the children was a bit wild just then, but we had to cut it short, unfortunately. Now, we are continuing this morning with our reading of Matthew. We're looking at Matthew chapter 14 this morning. And contrary to our usual tradition, due to some sort of aberration with our schedule, we won't be having a presentation this morning. Oh. Instead, we'll just be having a message. Okay, so I think we're just waiting for one member of the band to come in. Yes, here he is. And I'll hand over to the band. Let's get started with a few songs.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Yes, well, let's sing our first song. If you'd like to stand up, we'll sing 10,000 Reasons.
Thank you.
instructions there. And the last one that we have is Psalm 103.
Sounds really good. So as I mentioned before, we won't be having a presentation this morning, a little bit of a departure from our usual sequence. So we're going to go straight into our reading of Matthew. But before we do that, I'd like to repeat the Lord's Prayer according to Luke. I don't know whether the Sunday school people are moving out, we might just give them a moment. So just to fill in while they're moving out, Matthew 14. So we've been looking at the parables of Jesus over the last couple of weeks, and now moving into a chapter that deals with a couple of really big miracles that Jesus did. So a little bit of a change in pace, but much of the same theme. Okay, so let's bow our heads now while I repeat the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, as in heaven, so in earth. Give us day by day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins, for we also forgive everyone that is indebted to us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. So working our way through Matthew still, nice picture there of the Sea of Galilee. Put us in the mood. Bit of action there today on the Sea of Galilee. And there's really about three major things happening in this chapter. A bit of a sad one to start with John the Baptist. And then a couple of Jesus, probably his most famous miracles, well-known miracles. I'm going to just read straight through. There's a few notes here and pictures, which we'll come back to a bit later. So starting from verse 1. At that time, Herod, the tetrarch, heard of the fame of Jesus and said unto his servants, "This is John the Baptist. He's risen from the dead, and therefore mighty works do show forth themselves in him." For Herod had laid hold on John and bound him and put him in prison for Herodias's sake, his brother Philip's wife. For John said unto him, "It is not lawful for thee to have her." And when he would have put him to death, he feared the multitude, because they counted him as a prophet. But when Herod's birthday was kept, the daughter of Herodias danced before them and pleased Herod. Whereupon he promised with an oath to give her whatsoever she would ask. And she, being before instructed of her mother, said, "Give me here John Baptist's head in a charger." And the king was sorry, nevertheless, for the oath's sake, and them which sat with him at meat, he commanded it be given her. And he sent and beheaded John in the prison. And his head was brought in a charger and given to the damsel, and she brought it to her mother. And his disciples came and took up the body and buried it, and went and told Jesus. When Jesus heard of it, he departed thence by ship into a desert place apart. And when the people had heard thereof, they followed him on foot out of the cities. And Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude, and was moved with compassion toward them, and he healed their sick. And when it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying, "This is a desert place, and now the time is now past. Send the multitude away, that they may go into the villages and buy themselves victuals." But Jesus said unto them, "They need not depart. Give ye them to eat." And they say unto him, "We have here but 5 loaves and 2 fishes. He said, "Bring them hither to me." And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass, and took the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes. And looking up to heaven, he blessed and brake, and gave the loaves to his disciples, and the disciples to the multitudes. And they did all eat and were filled, and they took up of the fragments that remained 12 baskets full. And they that had eaten were about 5,000 men, beside women and children. And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and to go before him unto the other side, while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a spirit." And they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water." And he said, "Come." And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried, saying, "Lord, save me." Immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him, and said unto him, "O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt?" I'll just read this section from John, which has also has an account of this miracle. John 6, 18 to 21, "And the sea arose by reason of a great wind that blew. So when they had rowed about 25 or 30 furlongs, they saw Jesus walking on the water and drawing nigh unto the ship, and they were afraid. But he saith unto them, 'It is I, be not afraid.' Then they willingly received him into the ship, and immediately the ship was at the land whither they went." Back to Matthew 32. "And when they were come into the ship, the wind ceased. Then they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, 'Of a truth, thou art the Son of God.' And when they were gone over, they came into the land of Gennesaret. And when the men of that place had knowledge of him, they sent out into all that country round about and brought unto him all that were diseased, and besought him that they might only touch the hem of his garment, and as many as touched were made perfectly whole." Now, I'd just like to read also the account of the same event in John, because he has a little bit more information. John chapter 6, verse 22. "The day following, when the people which stood on the other side of the sea saw that there was none other boat there, save that one wherein his disciples were entered, and that Jesus went not with his disciples into the boat, but that his disciples were gone away alone. Howbeit, there came other boats from Tiberias nigh unto the place, where they did eat bread, after that the Lord had given thanks. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, neither his disciples, they took shipping and came to Capernaum, seeking for Jesus. When they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, 'Rabbi, when camest thou hither?' Jesus answered them and said, 'Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye seek me not because ye saw the miracles, but because ye did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labour not for the meat which perisheth, but for the meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed.'" Okay, so that's the end of the chapter, and a little bit more. And let's have a break now, and we'll sing a hymn, hymn number 81. Hymn number 81. The kingdom of heaven was likened to leaven. The first Eve did hide in 3 measures of meal. And Daniel was bidden the words to keep hidden for 3 times to cover them under a seal. A few people challenged there. I chose that song because it talks about the fourth watch, and Jesus came to the disciples on the sea in the fourth watch. In fact, there's so many references in there, I thought it would be good just to quickly go through some of them, not all of them, and just pull out some of the verses that it's referring to in that hymn, because there's just so many things that it talks about. Daniel, bidden the words to keep hidden for 3 times to cover them under a seal. And that comes from Daniel chapter 12, verse 7. Heard the man clothed in linen which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever, for a time, times and a half, when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. So 3 times the words were to be sealed. It says, hid Jesus 3 days were. The 3 days of Hosea were hidden the same. Hosea 6, verse 2, after 2 days will he revive us. In the third day, he will raise us up and we shall live in his sight. So again, a reference back there to those 3 periods of time, those 3 dispensations where we saw that Jesus came after 2 days, after the second dispensation, and provided that ability for us to come to him and be united with God, and to raise us up to that standard. Just a couple more. Isaiah's years were sealed and were not revealed. Isaiah 29:11, it says, the vision of all is become unto you as the words of a book that is sealed, which men deliver to one that is learned, saying, read this, I pray thee. And he saith, I cannot, for it is sealed. And in Isaiah 8:16, it says, bind up the testimony, seal the law among my disciples. There's so much in the scriptures that is just sealed and that we don't understand. Then the fourth watch, referring to when Jesus came to them walking on the sea, which is about, it was somewhere between 3 and 6 a.m. in the morning. And then there's a reference to the 12th hour being here. So we can think there of the story of the man that had a vineyard, and he went out to hire labourers, and he'd hire people out throughout the day, and the payment was going to be a penny. And he went out about the 11th hour and saw more people, and he hired them for the same amount, for a penny. So that was the 11th hour. And then at the end of the day, the people that were hired earlier thought they might have got more payment, but they got exactly the same amount because that was the deal at the 12th hour. So many references there to look at in that hymn. I thought it was just worth going through that before we went back and had a look at our chapter for today. So we started off with John the Baptist. Now, this mention of Herod. Herod is a very confusing name in the New Testament. There are so many Herods. Remember, it was Herod at the time when Jesus was born. Got a bit of a diagram which might help. That was actually Herod the Great. Four of his children are shown below. One of them is Herod Antipas, and that's the Herod we're talking about here in this chapter. And we can see there his brother Philip. And Herodias had this wife who was... Philip had this wife whose name was Herodias. She left him and then came to be with Herod Antipas. And that's what John was so much up in arms about. Very confusing, this. That Herod family was just so interrelated. Questions afterwards. So I'm not going to go into any more detail on the Herods at this stage, but I think it's something that we have studied in the past, but it's certainly something that is worth studying. But the point I think we can get out of this part of this chapter here is that John the Baptist was really one to stand up for what he believed and get out there and make a statement. And as we can see, he got himself into a lot of trouble for actually doing that. So we've seen that in the news recently, where we had Israel Folau, who made a statement on social media, and he got himself into a lot of trouble and finished up with his sacking this week. And a lot of people see that as a landmark case. So what should we do? I mean, we hold the Christian beliefs. We could be placed in a situation where we see something that's wrong. And what should we do to stand up against that? And I think we need to go back to the example of Jesus in this case. Excuse me, and the one that example that came to mind there was when Jesus was confronted by the Pharisees, and they came with the woman who was taken in adultery. I believe it was Mary Magdalene. And they said to him, this woman was taken in adultery. They were trying to put him on the spot, trying to get him to condemn her and to support their view. And we know the story well, how he stooped down and wrote in the ground, and then he said, let him who is without sin cast the first stone. And you can imagine that situation of how Mary must have felt. She was obviously in the wrong, that wasn't questioned, but this was a life and death matter for her. She could have been stoned to death, and she's just waiting there for the first rock to fall. And instead Jesus says this amazing statement. And of course, all of the people who were wise started to drift off till there was no one left. And he says, "Where are your accusers? Does anyone accuse you?" And she said, "No man. No man, Lord." And he says, "Neither do I accuse you." So quite a different way that Jesus handled it in comparison with how John the Baptist and Israel Folau stood up and made a statement. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't stand for our beliefs, but we certainly have to be careful what we do, or else we could get into a lot of trouble. And I think we have to come back to Jesus, come back to what Jesus did, and take that as an example for ourselves. There were a few people mentioned there, Philip the Tetrarch, and the colours aren't real good here, but Herod the great's king was divided among his children, Herod Archelaus, and we can see the blue area, which is this area down here. We can see the territory of Herod Antipas, the purple area. And this is why Jesus was sent to Herod when he was tried before Pontius Pilate, because that was an area that Herod was the tetrarch over. And the territory under Philip, the yellow area, which is not a very good yellow, but right up there in what is current-day Jordan. And quite a large area under Salome, who I think was Herod the Great's sister. Very much a family show, this ruling of Israel. So that's how the situation fitted in, how Herod got involved, and how Herodias was involved. Now, the feeding of the 5,000. So it must have been a great blow to the disciples and to Jesus when John the Baptist was actually beheaded. And Jesus decided that they needed time out. They needed to go across to have some quiet time on their own. And that wasn't to be, of course. Now, the map that we have here on the board, we don't really know where this occurred, this feeding of the 5,000. There's a few theories about it. I read that section out of Luke. I think I read it. That says they departed into a place belonging to the city called Bethsaida. Now, I have seen texts, and I think when we were in Israel, it said actually that the Church of the Loaves and Fishes was down on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. But if we go by what Luke says, that they actually went to a place near Bethsaida, then that would mean they were up on the northeastern side. So they departed there in ship, and it sort of makes sense that the people would follow on foot by land and came to that area where he was with the disciples, trying to have a bit of time out. Wasn't to be, as I said, and Jesus, of course, had compassion on them, spoke to them, healed them, and as it turned out, he even fed them. And this is one of the great miracles that we read, of the loaves and fishes, how he took five loaves and two fishes and fed all of these people, 5,000 men. We don't know how many people. It could have been three or even four times that number of people if you take into account the women and children. Mind you, I don't know how they all got the time off work. That's a lot of people to be going out into the desert just to hear Jesus. Too bad for that guy who was on a no-carb vegetarian diet. Anyway, we don't hear of any complaints about the catering, so it must have been pretty good. The interesting thing in this part of the chapter is that the fragments, and I think it's very interesting to look at the numbers in these parables. I'm not a numbers man, but Tim's the numbers man. But the fact that they took up 12 baskets full of fragments after Jesus had fed the multitudes, 12 baskets full left over. And in the same way that Jesus has a message to the whole world to save the Gentiles, to save all the people in the world. And after that message of salvation has filled the people, there are 12 baskets full left over, which we like to think of as being a message to the 12 tribes of Israel, a special message over and above that basic feeding of the multitudes. You could even look at the 5,000 men, if we recall that there is a period of roughly 6,000 years since the world began now. And this message of Jesus was the food fed 5,000 men, which we could take as a message coming up to the first 5,000 years. And then this message to Israel being coming to the fore after that time. And that comes up in this next section as well. So Jesus still wanted to have his time out. And I think this is an important message for us out of this part of the chapter as well, that we will have times when we have struggles in our life, when we have great stress. And it is important that we have time out with God. It's interesting how he managed the crowds at this time. He sent the disciples straight away. And we've seen an example of how Jesus could go through a crowd when he first of all announced the start of his ministry and the people were going to throw him over the cliff, and he just walked straight through the middle of them. So the traditional Jedi trick, being able to just walk through and people didn't even know that he was there. So perhaps he had to do this today. On this day, he sent the disciples away so the people saw that they'd gone. He sent the people away and then he went off to pray on his own. Important that we always have that time to pray, that we dedicate time to God, time when we can restore our soul, that we can get close to God. Okay, so now the disciples are out in the sea, and we've spoken about the Sea of Galilee before, how there is a great tendency there for wild storms to come up. The Sea of Galilee is below sea level, very low. There are reasonably high hills around it, and I believe what happens is that cool winds come across the hills and then they'll suddenly drop down onto the sea, and they can cause very boisterous storms and great waves. We saw that before when Jesus was asleep in the boat and he stilled the waves. So a similar thing here. The disciples are trying to row to land and the wind is against them. And then along comes Jesus in the middle of the night, fourth watch, walking on the sea. So another one of Jesus' great miracles. I think it's really part of our culture, isn't it? This walking on water. something that everybody knows about, even though they mightn't know the full story. They would have heard of walking on water. Now, I always like to think with these miracles, is there a way that you can explain this? I mean, for me, it's enough to say it was a miracle. God, Jesus is the Son of God, and God wrote the book. He can arrange things however he wants it. And I think as Christians, that is really enough for us to believe that it was a miracle. But at the same time, there are always people that are going to question it and say, no, it's just a myth, didn't happen. And then there are people that are going to look at it and say, well, there must be some scientific explanation for this. So I thought I'd see what people had said about it. And if you go online and you search for walking on water, and particularly Brainiac, you'll find an interesting one where this group of people did an experiment. And, of course, they got one of their people to walk on the swimming pool, and down he went, couldn't walk on the water. But they decided they would try it with custard. So they drained the swimming pool and they filled it with custard. They didn't actually fill it right up. It was only about probably that deep. Deep enough to prove the point anyway. And got the same man to walk across the swimming pool, and yes, he could walk on the custard. Why is that so? Custard is what they call a thixotropic liquid. And if you hit a liquid like that, it's actually hard. And there are other experiments that you can find on the internet of people doing mixing up water and corn flour. And then they'll hit the mixture with a hammer, and it's hard. But of course, if you rest the hammer on it, it just sinks down. So they're saying, okay, well, maybe this is an explanation with this thixotropic liquid. Perhaps there was an earthquake and the mud stirred up on the bottom of the sea and made it so that Jesus could walk on the water. I don't know. It's a thought. As I said, I think for me, I'm happy to believe that it was a miracle. But there may be other explanations as well. I mean, if you go to Israel and you, I wouldn't say swim in the Dead Sea, but if you sit in the Dead Sea, that's an amazing experience where you can actually sit upright and read the newspaper because the water is so dense that your buoyancy is such that you are really sitting well up in the water. So it's possible that the water could have its properties changed so that somebody can walk on the water. Anyway, Jesus came along and he was walking on the water, and it was about the fourth watch. So I think we can see that as an example also of Jesus coming to us towards the end of the night. And we're like as if we're in the night now. We're in the darkness. And we are towards the end of the watch. So it's the time when Jesus is available and is there and will come to us. And he says, come. In the same way that Peter said to him, if it's you, Lord, bid me to come. We can say to Jesus, bid us to come to you. And he is saying, come. Now, Peter, it's interesting that when he first stepped out, he was walking on the water. But then he saw the waves, he saw the storm, and his faith failed him and he started to sink. And I think that's a message for us too, that we must keep our eyes on Jesus. If we take our eyes off Jesus and we look at the storms around us, that's when we start to sink. So the important thing is to keep our eyes on Jesus. Just towards the end there, where it says, so Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him. And He says to Peter, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? I read the section from John as well because I thought it was interesting that John gives the account as soon as Jesus stepped into the boat, he was immediately at the land. So another really amazing part of that miracle. So Jesus goes back to Capernaum. The people find that he's not there where they'd been fed yesterday. And so they head back to Capernaum. And here's the punchline of this miracle. And they said, how did you get here? And Jesus says to them, verily I say unto you, you seek me not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat of the loaves and were filled. So people always come along for a feed. But as Jesus said, that's not what you should be coming for. Labour not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed. So I'd like to leave you with that verse, and I'll ask the band if they would come up again, and let's finish off with a song.
Okay, thanks, Paul. When you feel like a stand up, we'll sing our last song, Oceans.
Thank you.
song to finish with. I thought we had to have that with walking on the water and how important it is for us to put our faith in Jesus. So I'll leave you with that verse from John chapter 6, 27. Labour not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed. Thanks for joining us today, and I hope to see you next week when we'll continue with Matthew chapter 15. I think we're going to do two more chapters of Matthew before we change books, so stay tuned.